Welcome to 4.0 to Pro, the only pickleball podcast that focuses on a single shot, tip, or strategy to improve your pickleball game with every single bite-sized episode. Our goal is to make you better on the court every time you hear our voices. And now your hosts, 4.something Michael O'Neill and USA Pickleball National Silver Medalist, Senior Pro Scott Fliegelman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 4.0 to Pro. It is I, Michael 4.0 O'Neill from Long Beach, California.
That's
speaking
new.
To my good friend, I know, Darren Roebuck did that. Speaking to my good buddy, Mr. Scott Fliegelman there in Boulder, Colorado. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, Michael. It was good to have you out here for a few days.
Man, Boulder Pickleball is going to be a force. It is so cool. I'm so proud that you got that thing going. And guys, if you haven't already, go to, is it Boulder Pickleball on Instagram?
It is.
Yeah. Go follow that, because if you're anywhere in Colorado, you're going to want to stop by these amazing indoor courts. I have a couple pieces of housekeeping before we jump in. I generally don't do this, but a couple things. Number one, mega super thank you to you guys. We hit the top 200 list in the sports category in the world last week for this little show that we've made. We were ahead of like the Jim Rome show. There was no other pickleball podcasts in the top 200. So it was a huge deal to be able to do that. So thank you guys. High five to you. It is a huge, giant deal when you guys review the show, especially on Apple Podcasts. It's one of the things they really look at. The algorithm loves. So please keep that up. If you haven't already, please go to the Apple Podcasts app and leave us a review. But the other thing you can do to really, really help the show is if you are in any pickleball Facebook groups, please share the show. It's better if you guys do it than if we do it. If you guys share 402p.com/Apple, that will take them right to the Apple Podcasts app. You can also share the Spotify, 402p.com/Spotify, and that will take them to the Spotify app for the show. And of course, we are on all other podcast platforms. Finally, if you guys are interested in buying a carbon paddle, we have a discount code. So it's 10% off. You can use the code 402P, 402P at checkout and get 10% off. And that obviously helps the show as well. We're doing something today that, like, 2 years ago, I was like, man, I think lobs are going to be a thing. And now that paddle technology has caught up a little bit more, we can get a little more English on the ball. We're starting to see some lobs in some places where we haven't seen them before. And I know, Scott, you've got some opinions on this, but we've got basically defensive lobs. We've got offensive lobs. So I'm curious, Scott, defensive. Let's talk about defensive lobs and how effective they are.
So yeah, Mike, I agree. I think lobs should definitely be a thing. I'm going to tell you one place where they should not be a thing all that much, and that's the defensive lob. Mm. We need to holster this instinct, especially our converted tennis players. I've been there, and we are taught to chuck up a lob when we're out of position, and that makes a lot of sense on a ginormous tennis court with a rubber cord ball and strings, and you can buy yourself a whole bunch of time and get yourself back into play. On the pickleball court, we have a tiny court. We've got a plastic ball and a paddle with no strings. We can't get that thing up high enough and keep it in play and buy ourselves enough time. So I like to say, if only the founders of the game had provided us 140 square feet of safe space, let's call it, on the other side of the net, in which our opponents can't step in and smash the ball back. Wait a second, they did. You know, right. There's a non-volley zone over there. So tennis players and others, if you are prone to throw up defensive lobs out of desperation, I'm going to strongly suggest that we begin the process of converting that habit into get it into the non-volley zone somewhere. I don't really care where, but that's the goal. Just like a third shot, you know, let's get that thing lower where they can't do a whole lot of damage. So an under duress, let's get that thing in the non-volley zone and try to steer away from the defensive lob on most occasions.
So this is when they're firing balls at you. So typically as a tennis player, you just fire up a lob in response to that. Stop doing that and get it into the kitchen with a
in most cases. Let's get better at replacing that habit with a more pickleball appropriate response.
Now, offensive is a different cup of tea. I play with some players that are fantastic from, like, we're dinking and all of a sudden they'll throw up a lob and it, man, does it disrupt everything. We're running around with our, like a chicken with our heads cut off. And if it's targeted well, I mean, we've gotten to know a few players in our group and we know who can handle lobs well and who can't. We also knew who happens to lob more than others. But certainly it's best when you're in a dinking rally, you're at like in the non-volley zone. It's a great time to surprise your opponents with a lob. If you can do it from the backhand side, great. But when you're about to hit a forehand dink and you can just loop a lob over their heads with some topspin on it, man, is it disruptive, especially if you can go over the backhand side. So you're sort of hitting to that right rear corner. So for them, whoever's on that left side or the ad court side, they have to hit like a left hand or, you know, a behind the back weird overhead, which is not a comfortable thing to do. Even if they get a paddle on it, they're not going to be able to do much with it. And then they're out of position. So they're exposing their feet. You can probably get to their feet and end the point that way. But if you're dinking and you're able to take a ball out of the air versus letting the thing bounce and letting them reset, that's even more effective. And then, of course, on the diagonals, if you can hit it cross court, certainly if you're on the left-hand side and you can hit a backhand over there or even shift to where you're hitting a forehand and go over to that opposite corner, there's more real estate. And you can do obviously the same kind of thing if you go with the forehand side to the left-hand corner. So Scott, did I miss anything on the offensive side?
No, you're highly credible on that. I've played with and against you, and you do use this shot. And I think you laid it out really well. I will add that when you're playing upwind, it's an especially good time to consider these offensive lobs. I love that it's from the non-volley zone. I like to get them out of the air. It's just an extra element of surprise.
Yeah.
And this shot for me falls into the category of instigating. And we've used that word before. It's a type of instigating shot. And like you said, even if they get a stick on it out of, you know, off balance over their backhand side, it's going to come back favorably for us, and then we can be on the offense from there. So I am a big fan of the offensive lob, and you laid it out really nicely.
Especially if the wind's in your face.
Yes.
That is a really, really good time. If you get into the habit of hitting a lot of lobs and the wind is behind you, you're going to find that the balls are going to fly multiple feet out. In fact, tonight I was playing with somebody that kept firing up these lobs, and I was like, dude, the wind's behind us. It's going out 6 to 8 feet every time you do it. You might get one. It's not worth the 11 that you tried to get that one.
Tell them to come to Boulder Pickleball. We've got 24-foot ceilings and not a wisp of wind.
There you go. Now, you completely crushed me on a ball, on a third shot. You served, I returned, I was coming in, felt pretty confident about my return. You fired a lob, a literally perfect topspin lob over my head, and that was that. That was like part of my game two frustration that we might actually cover in a future show. You were nice enough to put me on the court with 7 5-0+ semi-pro or pro players. And that was a very interesting slash humbling experience. But one of the games, you hit just the most beautiful topspin lob. And you're a big fan of the third shot lob, aren't you, Scott?
I am. To our defense, it may have been 9-1 or 10-1 at the time. So that's not a bad time to try some of these shots. Let me give you a couple of other great opportunities where I proactively, before the serve, not surprisingly, consider that this may be an opportune time for a third shot lob. And we've already discussed it. The first one, into the wind. When I'm hitting into the wind, my third shot lob antenna gets a little excited. I'm looking for that opportunity. And then things get a little more nuanced from there, where you really have to be paying attention to what's happening on the other side. I look for an opportunity when playing against left-handed players that they're in an unstacked position, or it certainly appears that they're not going to stack. And what that does a lot of the time is it puts two backhands in the middle. So I consider this an effective third shot to put a lob up right down the middle. And I expect one of them to get a backhand on it, but my partner and I are going forward and we're going to get the next ball out of the air. Throw up a conservative lob. One of them's going to hit a backhand overhead most likely, and not expecting to win the point outright, but it's going to get my partner and I forward to the non-volley zone, which is all we're trying to accomplish. Another similar opportunity is as they're unwinding the stack. So you've got your lefty on the ad side and their backhand's in the middle. They're going to hit their return and then they have to book it all the way over to the other side of the court. While they're on the move like that, is another good time to put up a lob. The middle's safe, little confusion between the two of them, which one's going to take it. And again, we're likely to get a backhand.
I love that. Dirty. Yeah, that's a dirty dog move right there.
Yeah, it's double secret. It's good stuff.
That is a really good one. If you neutralize the rally and you get to the non-volley zone, what happens there?
When we make it to the non-volley zone?
Yeah, what happens
there? Well, what else but a four-person ritual kitchen exchange here on 402P?
Yeah, I love the 4PRKE. That needs to be the next secret shirt. So not only do we have 402P, which will have to be a hat or something. Hey, by the way, would you guys want some merch? Should we make hats and t-shirts and stuff? Hit me on Instagram, 4.0 to pro on Instagram. And let me know if we put out some hats or something, if you'd wear them. Now we know how to lob, Scott. What do we do when we're being lobbed? What's the story?
So a quick story on that. I recall a few months ago checking out the Pickleball Forum on Facebook, and someone asked a question: is what is the proper response when being lobbed? What is the right shot to hit back when you're being lobbed? I roughly counted 92 responses before anyone mentioned what I consider to be the obvious number one answer. There were answers that included lob back, hit a drive, get a ball in a kitchen. You know, some decent answers, but not one person, maybe the 93rd person, said hit an overhead smash, which is just, to me, the obvious response when being lobbed. So, and then everybody goes, oh, well, yeah, of course, if you get it out of the air. I'm like, well, why did you default to letting it bounce? Like, you know, if you're imagining this scenario, you're imagining turning around and running back and letting it bounce. Well, right. Don't do that. It's only 22 feet. And you start off 7 feet from the net. So now you're covering 15 feet. So we need to be, I like to say on the court, come hell or high water, getting these balls out of the air.
Well, not only that, but the ball doesn't bounce. The ball could be 15 feet in and it hits the ground and goes up about 3 feet. So you've just taken an opportunity to take it from a really high point, and now you're hitting it waist high versus having it, you know, above your head. So
yes.
That's silly. Well, I'm going to teach you guys how I learned to hit an overhead. And Scott, I want you to let me know if I got this right-ish and chime in if we missed anything. So
I'm sure you got it. Let's hear it.
The first thing to imagine, if you guys have ever watched a tennis player serve the ball, that is effectively what we're trying to mimic here. Our left hand is going to be pointing. This, I'm assuming you're a right-handed player. Obviously, make everything opposite if you're a lefty. So the ball's in the air. I'm going to point at the ball with my left hand fully extended. My arm is fully extended and I'm pointing at the ball. While I'm doing that, my right hand is scratching my back as far back as I can, right in the middle of my back. So basically, it kind of looks like my right elbow is up near my ear, and then my paddle is right behind, like I'm scratching my back with it. My left hand is pointing towards the ball, and then I'm moving back sideways. So I've shifted my body perpendicular to the net. So now I'm not facing it and squared up to it. I'm sidestepping to get under the ball. Once I do that, I want to extend and reach that paddle. I want to meet the ball at the highest point that I can, because again, that gives me the best angle down to the court. And then I want to follow through across my body. If you guys could picture that, it's exactly like a tennis serve, but you know, an overhead smash is just about the choreography of movement, of getting that back scratch to extension to across your body. That's the best I could do, Scott. What do you think?
I officially award you your tennis dork merit badge.
Sweet.
Very awesome. Well done.
So fill in the blanks.
Clarifying, given this is the 4-0 to pro show, yeah. Much of what Michael went over is somewhat obvious and something that most of our listeners are already doing. The part that I do see at 4-0 plus that is a head scratcher for me is the lack of turning sideways and the backpedaling that right. goes on. This is not just, you know, for 2-0s. There are 4-0 pluses that are still backpedaling, which is inefficient, dangerous, because you can fall on your ass pretty easily. And biomechanically speaking, you have very little torque on the shot. This is why you don't see servers in tennis standing square to the net. They turn sideways and they get their trunk muscles involved and all of the beautiful core rotation that we're missing out on if our shoulders are squared up to the net when we hit our overhead smash. So 4-0 to pro, let's stop doing that. Sidestep back to the ball, put the brakes on, follow the rest of Mike's advice.
One thing I will say about the sidestep is you want to burst to the spot. So you're not sort of lackadaisically backing up. You want to really put some emphasis on it. So you're set up and ready by the time it gets to where you need to swing. So it's not sort of like you're not doing 19 things at once. We, again, stable base, stable base, stable base. We want to get there, set ourselves up, bang, hit the shot. This is the part I think that can get a little weird, Scott, which is like, who takes it? Who takes the ball? Does it depend on where it's going on the court? Is it something you guys talk about ahead of time? I have definitely played with some players that don't move very well. And I'm just like, look, if there's an overhead, I'll take it. But usually that happens after the other team has lobbed us and we've missed it. So there's a little bit of an ego thing that sometimes happens where I'm just like, if you want, I'll totally run that down. I got some wheels and I know what I'm doing there. So if you're that person that maybe doesn't move so well, don't be afraid to say, look, if they lob us, you take it. I'm going to switch to whatever side you're not on, depending on where the lob is. That's okay. That might not be as advantageous as if both players can take them, but that's just something I face a little bit, Scott, in my world. Is it something you guys have a conversation about before you start playing?
It's probably a little bit of both. I do like words like choreography and dance steps when visualizing how best to handle being lobbed. I'm going to go over these dance steps with you. You may want to rewind. You may want to listen to the show a second time. But it'd be good to get these down. It'd be good to chat them over with your regular partner. And then feel free to freestyle from there. But these are some basics. The more tennis experience you have, the more it may feel familiar. But let me go through them first. So a lob goes up over player A. We want to give that player first dibs to be able to decide if he or she can get that ball out of the air. And given my previous comments about come hell or high water, let's get these things out of the air. Let's give him a chance to get it out of the air. So if I'm player B, the lob goes over player A. I ideally like to hear from player A, me, mine, I go. Something that lets me know I'm off the hook. I don't have to dash back for this ball. And my partner's going to get it out of the air. So instead of running back with them, I honor their effort and I actually go forward. I go right to the middle of the non-volley zone. I get low and I like to think of it as cleanup duty. If that ball, after it's been smashed by my partner, comes back at all, it's usually pretty weak sauce. And I'm ready to finish the job. So that's my favorite thing to do.
Can I ask you something about that?
Yes.
Are you looking at your partner to see where that ball's going so you're giving them enough room to hit the overhead so you're not sort of in the way?
That's why I get low.
Okay.
I may even put a knee on the ground.
Okay. You're really getting low. You're getting below net level.
Yes.
You can.
Yeah. I want to remove any anxiety that they may have about hitting me.
Right.
But any of my regular partners know I'm going to do that. It's not going to hit me in the back of the head. And then I'm there to mop up if necessary. So option A here is if the ball goes over my partner's head, I'd love to hear them call mine, hit it out of the air, and then I'm right there to finish the job.
Sometimes if I'm the one who is in a bad position and I can't take it out of the air, I'll be like, help. And that tells my teammate, I would like you to go. I could say you or yours or switch or help or something like that to let my teammate know that I'm not in a good position to take this thing right now. It might be over my back shoulder and they might be in a little better position. Maybe they're a lefty, something where they can actually take it or make an offensive shot out of it. And I'm not, for whatever reason, able to do that. In which case I will get out of their way as much as I can. And if I have to, I'll get to where they were so I can switch with them or whatever needs to happen. Because again, it's a very chaotic shot. It's the beauty of a lob is it really causes chaos. But as soon as I can, I'll let my teammate know, like, help, I can't get this. This is you. And that is super helpful. Again, all about communication when these things happen.
And you mentioned earlier playing with a partner who's not terribly mobile. We still want to give him first dibs to take that ball out of the air, give him the respect to get it out of the air. But be pretty ready to hear yours, help, or switch. And then you're on your horse and off you go on the diagonal in a much better position geometrically to be able to field this ball that got over your partner's head versus that same guy running straight back for a ball. He has a terrible angle to field it. It's much better right. If you go there on the diagonal.
If I'm that person and I need to bail out on it, do I head back to the baseline or do I somehow kind of run around to do what you do, which is to kind of duck and get ready for the overhead? What's the best move?
So we've made this assumption now that it went over his head and he abdicated. He said, I'm not going to get it. Help, switch. And it's probably going to bounce. So now his partner runs back and we'll talk about what to do with this shot in a second. But you're now on defense. So I don't want any of the players left anywhere near the non-volley zone because they're going to get clobbered
right.
on the next shot if they're not careful. So if you've called yours, help, or switch, you clear out of your side and you go back with your partner.
Okay.
So you both want to head back and then you're going to need to play the next shot from there as a team.
This is when you get into like full defensive mode. Both of my hands are on the paddle. I'm in a stable base. I've split step and I'm like ready for whatever happens. It's the best thing we can do. At that point, Scott, it's like a third shot, right? We have to basically work our way back up to the non-volley zone by, you know, good drops, et cetera.
That is the big light bulb moment for players when they get this right, is they're like, well, we kind of had to go back to the beginning, treat it like a third shot scenario and work our way back up to the non-volley zone. Yes, that's exactly right. What happened when you let that lob get over your head, which is why we don't want to let lobs get over our head. But if it does happen, we want the player who's on a diagonal to go back and get it. Both of you go back toward the baseline, consider it like a third shot scenario and start over.
In general, the ball's bouncing. My partner has cleared out. What are my options there? Like, what kind of shot should I hit? I got a little cheeky the other day with you and I fired a Daniel De La Rosa because I had a little bit of racquetball experience. And what that is, you guys, is basically like you're running next to the ball as it's about to bounce. As it bounces, you sort of jump up, spin 180 degrees and fire a drive right back at them. I think I've hit maybe the one that I hit against you guys, Scott, out of the 10 times I've tried it. So
yeah, and Daniel De La Rosa is, you tell me, number one in the world in racquetball?
Yeah, he's pretty good.
And a heck of a good pickleball player. And it's a beautiful shot that he hit, but I think I only know 1.5 guys that are capable of doing this shot. Yeah. This is back to that pickleball forum question, is now that the ball has bounced, what do we do? And the answers are lengthy. Lob the ball back, drive the ball back. To me, it's fairly obvious. Again, if only there were 140 square feet of safe space on the other side. Oh, yes, there is. So just like a third shot, if you can drop that ball into the non-volley zone, and I don't care where, anywhere along the 20 feet, gets you back into the rally and gives you guys a fighting chance of working your way back up to the non-volley zone. So I'm looking to drop this ball.
Part of it is like you're off balance. That's part of this. You're buying yourself a little bit of time. I think about myself in this situation and go, yeah, I've definitely turned around and fired a drive there just because it's like, I think I can. But the reality is it's probably better to do a drop. It's probably better to have that opportunity to drop it in the NVZ and just give yourself a second to set your body back up, just to get your feet underneath you, because you've just scrambled. You're like, it was a full scramble drill. Now you're going to get like back to, all right, let's get back to normal again and like start trying to earn our way back up. That's kind of how I think about it.
Like most every other shot in the game, Ben Johns does this better than most in the world. When that ball gets over his partner's head, he heads back on the diagonal and he hits a beautiful, soft, buttery drop shot every single time. Not rushed, lands in the kitchen, and then he and Colin or whoever, or Annalie, they start to work their way back up from there. And that's how it's done. They don't fire up desperation defensive lobs when the ball gets over their head and they don't hit drives.
Right. They do the thing that they practiced over and over and over, and they just do that shot. They do
because it feels like a third shot scenario to them.
It's not even an AB, is it?
They will drop.
It's a drop.
Yes.
All right. So that's a big deal that we know that. If we get lobbed, it bounces, hit a drop.
Done.
That's, I think, something we should go with. Do you ever go behind your partner and like take the overhead on their side?
Funny like you should ask, because this exact scenario happened about 9 hours ago today, playing a great mixed doubles match with my amazing future senior pro partner, Molly Carter, 49.
So good.
Stay away, guys. We're taking the tour next year. She is so good in every aspect of the game. But they did get a ball over her head, you know, because she was highly engaged at the NVZ and ready to do, you know, lots of other damage. And good for our opponents who snuck a ball over her head. And silly me. I did get a jump on it, but what I failed to do was use any kind of verbal communication to let her know I was there. Mm. I got over there, but she had not yet given up. So what followed was me smashing the ball and Molly at the same time. Now she's nice, super nice. And she says that the ball hit her in the forehead, not my paddle. I'm not so sure.
Wow.
Because she needed glue to repair the gash in her forehead.
No way.
Yeah,
That happened today.
We took it like a 5-minute break and got back out after it. And she was amazing from there. But my bad. I will jump behind my partner every now and then and snag it out of the air. But I have to verbally let them know I'm there.
You gashed her forehead. So she looks like, I don't even know what. She's got bloody head. And you super glue her face together. And she's like, cool, let's go. That's what just happened?
If you're just tuning into the show, pickleball is not as full contact as we're describing. But
good Lord.
My bad, but you know, we were very competitive.
Well, don't do that to me. I like my face.
Well, you'll get it out of the air. You'll call mine and we don't have to worry about it.
Oh, by the way, one thing we didn't really mention is use topspin on those lobs because it gets the ball to tuck in a little bit into the court. So instead of kind of a flat shot that you're just sort of throwing up there, you're kind of just getting it over their heads with some topspin. And that, to me, is the most effective version of the lob.
I can see a drill coming up using our spin shot ball machine and an 8 to 10 foot ladder.
Oh, I love that idea. Folks, you've now just listened to another episode of 402P, and thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for your reviews. Again, you guys are rock stars. If you could share in your Facebook groups, that would be super helpful for us. And go out there, play some pickleball, go have some fun. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to 4.0 to Pro. For more tips, find us on Instagram at 4.0 to Pro. If you have a pickleball question, submit it at picklehelp.com. Now, get out there and dominate. But don't forget to have fun.